Good morning, KINS. It's Thursday, January the 14th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
I heard your last comment before we opened the mics. We'll talk about it during the break. Oh, well, instead of why do we say that, we now have a new book. It's called Ever Wonder Why.
I always wonder why.
Yeah.
About everything.
I wonder who you are and why you're here. All right. I've got a Sailor Man one, and I've got a Manners one. Which would you prefer?
I'll do Manners.
Okay. Ever wonder why, when a lady spurns a gentleman, she is said to be giving him the cold shoulder?
Because she's showing him the door. He's going outside. I don't know.
Okay. Despite current usage, the phrase does not have a romantic origin. In fact, the shoulder in cold shoulder is actually the shoulder of mutton. In the early 19th century, when the phrase was first recorded by Sir Walter Scott, it was customary for a hostess to serve hot meat to visitors who were welcomed and cold meat to those who had overstayed their welcome. Since the cold meat given to the unwanted guest was usually a shoulder of mutton, the hostess was said to be giving him the cold shoulder of mutton. There you go.
There you go.
Lodging industry.
Yes.
Oh, boy. So how's the process of processing bad guys coming along?
Well, we just started another jury selection process yesterday. I think they sent out a couple thousand summons, and 37, I believe, people showed up, which, you know, is really low. But as you know, we've gone back into the purple tier, so it's just a really tough time for us to be trying to summons jurors. It's been interesting. Last year, we only tried 8 cases. We did 4 in the first 2 months. And then the courts were closed, as you know, from March through the end of August. And then we were able to, you know, try to quickly get in a couple more. We got in 4 more. But the last one, we actually started jury selection. It was a murder case in November. But then because of the increase in the numbers of COVID, you know, positive tests, the courts had to close again. There was a mistrial declared in that, you know, and the jury was released. So it's been a really slow process, and right now, you know, even with the vaccination, I'm not sure how quickly we're going to see an end in sight.
With the situation as it is, whether it's today's situation or Monday's situation, take your pick on the color of your choice, does the process slow down? Is it an elongated event, or is it just more difficult to kind of get the ball rolling, so to speak?
It's more difficult to get the ball rolling. So jurors do have the option, you know, of indicating due to concerns about their health and COVID not to come in. So it takes longer to actually get a full pool of jurors. And then once we get started, the selection is, you know, very similar to normal. It just depends on the nature of the crime, how quickly we can, you know, get the 12 jurors that are going to be seated to hear the case.
But as far as witnesses or experts or casual bystanders testifying, that part is not thrown into a bit of a slowdown process either?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. You're absolutely right on that point. We sometimes, I know we've talked about this now a couple times, sometimes we can Zoom our witnesses, which is ideal. But for example, we have a case starting, I think it's in a week or two, where we were talking about almost all of our witnesses are from out of the state, and they're being asked to come and then shelter in place for 2 weeks. So we're trying to come up with some other way to deal with that, because frankly, you know, to ask people to leave their families, leave their jobs, to shelter in place at a hotel for 2 weeks so that they can come and testify for an hour or two. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen to them when they return? Does their state then say, oh, you've been to California, now you need to shelter in place 2 weeks here? I mean, that's a lot. That's a huge burden.
Sure.
You know, to put on folks who simply were the first to call the police and report what they observed. And we see this, you know, obviously with, We do have crimes where it's witnesses who are traveling through back when we still had travel, who are, you know, these critical pieces of information that now, unfortunately, are really hampered by what's going on.
Yeah, well, so what is the hesitation? They just want to see a chair being warmed rather than a screen being filled?
Right. We have a couple, we talked about it, and it's like, oh, we don't want to Zoom either, because it's harder, you know, obviously, if you're trying to show them pieces of evidence, if you need them to offer an opinion on something that's in the courtroom, and, you know, it's really awkward to try to hold it up to the camera or whatever. So there's things like that. But other than that, I think Zoom is really very, very effective. I mean, the standard witness is going to come in, answer questions, and then be done.
Right.
There's really no reason not to Zoom.
Well, and I would, I would think also for jurors, you could extend
right.
it to that also. You know, why
right.
why bother having them come in if they don't need to? And it doesn't, I've never understood. It's not like we're tasting poison food or handling, you know, some of the gunky stuff. I mean, we're just observers.
Well, except there is, so the camera only gives you one perspective, right? So if you're a juror and the camera is right now focused on the witness, you're missing out on what else is taking place. I mean, sometimes, you know, there are other, you know, sometimes the defendant is responding. Sometimes they're actually saying something. You know, we've had defendants who have pointed at the witness and everybody understood, you know, either that was meant to intimidate or something else. So there's these issues that being in the courtroom, jurors' perceptions could be severely
sure.
limited. So I think having jurors in the courtroom is very, very important. And then, obviously, the process of coming together to deliberate is something that, you know, we would never, ever want to lose, I don't think.
herd mentality. I gotcha. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning on the air with Maggie Fleming. Someday we're going to figure out a way to be able to edit the mid-show commercial break discussions. Sometimes they get a little bit more fun and more certainly more exciting.
That's right.
So with the Zoom cases and the technology, we have talked about the court's hesitancy to allow technology to be employed in some, if not many, of the various applications that could occur. And you certainly, we don't want it on the cutting edge, but not to recognize some of these technologies, to me, seems counterproductive. Are there any changes that are, I guess, in the wings, so to speak, that we could be seeing in the next couple of years, not necessarily because of the virus, but just with the advancement of technology?
So I would really hope, you know, right now we're still sort of in that world of it's a constitutional right to, you know, confront witnesses against you. So that, you know, right now if we say, hey, we have these witnesses out of state, everybody okay if we Zoom, and the defense says we object, then we have to bring them here. I can understand it to a certain level. So, for example, you don't know where the person is. So you don't know if they're being influenced. You don't know if there's somebody standing, you know, behind the computer that has the camera on it, holding up signs, no, no, say this, right? You know what I mean? So there's that loss of control. But to me, it's like, Well, then let's find a solution to that. You know, our witnesses are out of state. How about if they have to go to the police department and sit in a room and give their interview, and we can have law enforcement, sort of like the bailiff, say, yep, they're here, there's no one else with them, whatever it is. But I do think we have to move forward on that, because the reality is we live in such a different time now. We do everything in such a different way than we originally presented court. And it's time for us to, you know, play catch up and try to move forward on this. I mean, I have thought about this with all the changes we've seen very rapidly related to the pandemic. Some of these have worked well, you know, and why don't we keep those? Why don't they become part of how we proceed? Because the cost savings, the time savings, the toll it takes. I mean, we have witnesses who get a job, you know, in Texas, or, and then we say, oh, finally, this case is going to go to trial. And too often they say, I can't come. You know, I can't be away from work for the amount of time it's going to take me to travel. And it'd be different if they were still working downtown Eureka and could say to their boss, hey, I got to run over to court for a couple hours. That'd be fine. But to say to your new employer, I got to go to California for 3 or 4 or 5 days is a little bit much.
Right.
And we just see it constantly. And I really do think there's, and then of course, you know, as we've talked about with our experts, with lab, you know, the DOJ being in Sacramento or somewhere else, and other experts being throughout the state, it's very, very burdensome, particularly on rural counties, to bring in expert witnesses. So it would be phenomenal if we could move forward with the technology with court.
I would suspect that, criminal justice term there. Sorry.
Thank you, Brian.
That the defense attorneys lobbying group is probably in the mix here also. Are they in favor of some of these adjustments, or do they see these as opportunities to have their folks, guilty or not, to be kicked out and for them to, quote-unquote, win the case?
So, you know, that's a really good question. I think sometimes they've appreciated the technology as well. The issue's always going to be, you know, because our job is basically, you know, justice for all the parties. That's the responsibility of the prosecutor, making sure that there's a just outcome for everyone involved, including the person accused. The defense solely is their only concern is their client's best outcome. So it's to their advantage to say no. It's to their advantage to delay cases. You know, generally, we have a much harder time. The slower things go, we have a harder time, you know, bringing people in. So it's a matter of, that's their responsibility. It's not to the outcome of the case overall. It's to the outcome of their sole client.
Right. So their focus is much more narrow.
Right. That's their obligation.
So the prosecutor represents Joe Sixpack, right?
We represent everyone in the process. That's correct.
So with the defense attorney, I would think that they would also have an underlying responsibility for the protection of the citizenry and the community.
They don't. So, and that's the interesting issue, is I think people perceive it that way. So lawyers in general, but for prosecutors, lawyers in general have a duty to their client. They have a responsibility and they have a legal obligation to their client. So, for example, and I, you know, I always think back to this because it was probably such a difficult position for the public defender to be in, conservatorships. So when I would start the hearing to conserve somebody, even if, you know, everybody recognized this person, you know, if we could get them conserved and get them a public guardian, you know, maybe they were a veteran and they were receiving, you know, veterans aid, we could get them into good housing. We could get them a much better lifestyle. But if that person said to their public defender, but I don't want that, I don't want to be conserved, they were walking a really fine line of trying to do the best they could for their client, representing what their client wanted, but also recognizing this really isn't in their best interest.
Right.
You know, the best interest would be for me to just say, yep, you know, let's conserve him. And I always thought that's like one of those really, really difficult spots for an attorney to be put in because, you know.
You can't win or you can't lose, depending on your point of view.
Right, yeah. That's right.
KINS, that's News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming, Humboldt County District Attorney. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, by Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Maggie, as you go through the processes, and whether the courts are open or they're not, are you seeing inside the courthouse the polarization like we are experiencing outside? Is there less wiggle room, so to speak, or is everybody as ramped up inside, or is the respect of the Constitution and the criminal justice system still kind of overriding our personal attitude adjustments?
So I think, you know, that our obligations and our follow the law, follow the Constitution will never be altered. That is always, you know, the first rule of what we do in the courtroom as criminal lawyers and as prosecutors. I think what I've seen throughout my personal life as well as my professional life is that I have some concerns about the rules we're following for COVID is impacting our civility. I just feel that not having as many opportunities to sort of come together in a more casual, social way, it makes it a little easier to be abrupt with people. And I've seen it. I've had a couple of attorneys come in and talk to me about it. And sometimes, you know, when you're watching Zoom, it kind of feels a little bit like we've lost the kindness aspect that we really need to have in your daily life, you know, because the job's tough. We deal with really, really tough moments of everybody's lives, you know, whether it be the victim or the defendant or witnesses. And part of how you cope, you know, in a real sense, is that the surrounding participants, the criminal defense attorney, the clerk, the judge, we're all there together and we're sort of sharing that experience. And, you know, after a case is over, sometimes we'll say, you know, I'm really sorry about the way this went or whatever. There's just more personal engagement that is lost right now. And I think it's taking a huge toll. And I think that's true, like I say, for people in their everyday lives as well. It's gotten harder, you know, to get things done, and it's affecting people.
So if you're seeing that on an individual basis, are you seeing it systemically inside the courthouse also, either the processes inside the courtroom or those leading up to it?
No, I think sadly we're just seeing so much get put off that there isn't quite the same impact in the criminal process. It's just more of a, you know, everything's just been significantly delayed due to court closures. So that's sort of a different piece that's been very negatively affected by COVID.
Long-term impacts of this thing? Other than hopefully some of the technology breakthroughs that might be adopted, do you see anything lingering after it's done, or is everybody just kind of chomping at the bit to get back to getting back?
I think long term, one thing we're going to see is, you know, part of not having the courts available has made us try to think of other options. And this was something that I think I mentioned to you before. We've been talking for a while. The police chiefs and myself, and particularly Chief Watson, I've had a conversation just because we're seeing so much of what affects our lives daily, crime that affects everyone's life daily, that really isn't being addressed by the courts, even when they're running. So, you know, not just homelessness, but obviously the drug addiction issues, the drunken public issues, because really the courts aren't set up to handle it. You know, it's you get an arraignment date, you're entering a plea, you're told to come back in a couple of months. I mean, this is even before COVID. So we're not really addressing the issues. And so I've looked sort of, you know, out to try to see other ways. And what I'm trying to set up is sort of more of a neighborhood court. It's sort of like a pre-filing diversion. And the idea is community members try to address the issues in their own communities. So if the merchants in Henderson Center say, we have this ongoing problem with this person, you know, he's been arrested 3 times, what are you doing? Maybe we could find some other ways to address that. And I know that, you know, this was something that I heard from the merchants in the Garberville Redway area. Once that justice court closed down, they really lost a big part of how they addressed the local problems. And when you consider that if someone doesn't show up for court and on a bench warrant issues, it can be months before we locate them and get them back into court. And so throughout that period of time, you know, they just continue to, you know, create the problems that the community is really feeling the effects of. And trying to find a way to address that, you know, really it's not being helped by the court.
Something similar to, not a peer court, but I guess along those lines?
Along those lines, I guess, you know, we do it in a lot of general ways, but thinking about more of the true ongoing problem people, how do we address them? I mean,
right.
I've sat through a number of meetings where we talk, number one, we've got to have more services, and that's not ever been in doubt. You know, how to fund those is a different issue. But we need more services because a lot of them really do need sort of a shepherd. You know, they're not going to ever make their next appointment. It's just not going to happen. And that is one thing that I really saw handling the conservatorships, because once these people had a public guardian who was checking in with them, making sure that they were, you know, making it to their doctor's appointment and all of those sort of aspects of their life, they became a completely different person, you know, and that's always sort of what we have to try to address. There are those people who are violent, you know, and that's obviously going to be addressed by the courts, you know, in a different way. But for a lot of the low level, the people who have issues that affect how they behave in public, that maybe we could address a different way, we have to find an alternative to court.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, typically this time of the year, we're talking about budget and purchasing and expansions or cutting backs and doing it differently because of financial pressures. What we're hearing from some of the other folks that get the monies from the state, either directly or indirectly, is that the monies are much more prevalent than what anybody had anticipated when it came through the budget process last spring. Is that the case for your department also?
Well, not specifically for my department, but statewide, you know, the criminal justice system, we're seeing more funding. It was interesting because we just received information, you know, obviously about the governor's budget. And according to the legislative analyst's office, they said that although the state economy abruptly ground to a halt in the spring with the emergence of a coronavirus disease, it has experienced a quicker rebound than expected. I was surprised to see that quote. But then looking at what the governor, you know, where the money's going to go for some of the rehabilitation programs and juvenile probation, there has been some increase in the funding. So that's good because obviously, as we've seen, the Department of Corrections, the actual state prison system, has been shrinking significantly over the last 5 to 10 years. And what that means is that local communities are expected to pick up all of the supervision as well as all the services needed. And that's a big hit to rural communities. So having additional funds in that obviously would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I would suspect. Now, do you, because of the number of cases that aren't being processed right now, does that give you a little bit of relief on the budget?
It does. You know, Brian, the sad part is sometimes the legislators take action. I don't know that they really recognize their consequences. So, for example, studies show that perhaps a shorter term of probation is beneficial to the individual. Okay, so they decided to shorten probation, felonies down to 2 years, misdemeanors down to a year, except for those that are statutorily, you have to be on a longer term of probation, for example, domestic violence and driving under the influence. So the interesting part about that is that frequently, you know, so if you have the petty thief who, you know, goes into Safeway, steals something, they get a charge, they're then put on probation. The next petty theft they pick up, we don't usually file a new case. We file a violation of probation. And the reason is the court can then say to them, okay, you know, you got to stop doing this. What are the issues? What are we going to do to address this? Versus if we charge a new case, then it gets set for trial. And we can be a year or 18 months out before that case is going to go to court.
So it's processing and making the trials there, too.
Right.
You know, that's why you get paid the big bucks and you get the fancy title, right?
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that.
Almost got a that's right out of you. Thanks for coming by this morning.
Thank you,
go,
Brian.
Go get some bad guys. Thanks, Maggie. See
Thanks,
everybody
Brian.
Tomorrow.